Good morning and welcome to WMFO. That's Tufts Free Forum, commercial free, community based radio. We are also known as WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford. And today's show, for the next 2 hours, every other week, we bring you socialist alternative radio, a little slice of that community radio. And today we have our special guest host, Tom. I'll let him introduce himself in a minute. I'm Jeff. And this is Talkin' Music from a working class democratic socialist perspective for the next 2 hours. So, Tom, take it away.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm glad to be here. I'm honored to be here. I've been a listener over the years from the very first time that you broadcast and always look forward to the program. I like to call in from time to time and appreciate having a program that puts forward socialist ideas and gets them out there on the broadcasts them out there. I live in Cambridge and longtime resident of Cambridge and just happy to be here.
And for regular listeners, you may recognize Tom's voice. He's called into the show a few times. Sometimes we call him by his nickname, Tom Rad. And I love that nickname. And we're going to be talking about all sorts of stuff. One thing we set off air we wanted to talk about that we didn't just review, sort of, because we were doing a little bit of review before the show, is we said we'd talk about movies, political movies, because Tom is a really good film critic and has seen a ton of movies. And you were going to be a filmmaker, right? That was your original thing back in the day?
Very, very far back in the day, and attended film school for a short while.
There you go.
And basically was disoriented throughout.
disoriented.
But I do love movies and have always enjoyed movies and tried to learn more and more about movies and see as many as I can, although I don't see as many as I need to. One thing about movies is in this area, we get a small percentage of excellent movies. If you look in New York City, where a lot of them are shown, you see where we don't get a lot of good movies. They don't get into wide circulation, which is a shame. We have certain, like the Kendall and other theaters, yeah, that'll show them.
Yeah. Well, before we get into movies and other things, I just want to give an overview of today's show. Again, if you just tuned in, you're listening to WMFO in Medford, and we're a show called Socialist Alternative Radio. And we are on every other week, 11 a.m., every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and we're talking music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. You've been on the air here at WMFO for about 10 years, and thank you for joining us today. Today's show will be, of course, talking about Trump, how to stop Trump, Trumpism, all things Trumpish.
Trumpolini.
All things gross about Trump and how to stop that that regime from even getting its feet on the ground, or how to try to stop that regime from even getting its feet on the ground. And you're not going to be hearing on this show calls for national unity around our president, quote unquote, like the liberals or even liberals are saying now. For us, unity means unity of the working class and unity of the youth. And maybe unity of some small business owners that are going to be suffering under Trump as well. But it does not mean unity of the super rich with the working class. Does not mean unity of the corporate CEOs with the working class. Does not mean rallying around the flag for the rich. That's not our unity. And that's never going to happen. We're going to be at constant war with Trump. And we would have been at constant war with Clinton as well if she had been elected. Although the war would have been, I think, more... not as obvious right at the beginning to many, many people. Whereas with Trump, it's obvious he's pulling together the corporate agenda in a way, a very obvious way without concealment. The Democrats sometimes conceal the connections to the corporate world, whereas the Republicans under Trump are trumpeting it. They are very brazen with their corporate cabinet that's forming, despite the rhetoric, the pseudo-populist or right-wing populist rhetoric of the Trump of Trump when he was running for office. We're also going to be talking today about a new issue of Socialist Alternative the monthly paper of Socialist Alternative. We'll also be talking about, it's the 100th anniversary of the Russian Revolution. We'll hopefully get into that a little bit. And some other issues around homelessness, unemployment, and so on in the Massachusetts area. Now, we do have national and international listeners through the wonders of the internet. Check us out on Facebook also at Socialist Alternative Radio, our page on Facebook. And you can also find us at FenianRising.org or Fenian Rising on Facebook. They've downloaded a lot of our shows. Thank you, Fenian Rising, for doing that. And basically, we are there are a lot of ways to get in touch with Socialist Alternative. Part of the reason for this show is to organize people into the socialist movement and to see, to put out some information and hopefully get people interested in checking out Socialist Alternative, possibly joining Socialist Alternative to fight most effectively on a number of fronts, not just one single issue or progressive issue or whatever, and to fight, as we were talking about off air, a united front fashion, which we mean by united front is basically around a program or around an issue, getting together the widest possible forces, progressive forces, new people getting involved, some people on the left, but not hiding our identity as socialists. We're here. This is a very partisan, very upfront, open radio show, and you'll see our publications are like that. We are proudly socialist. We're 110% pro-union. We're 110% pro-worker. There's no, we don't believe in concealing our aims or, I feel like I'm quoting the Communist Manifesto a little bit here when I say this. We're not about concealing our aims or goals. We want democratic socialism and we want it through, well, unfortunately, we don't pick the battle. So we're going to get that through class struggle. We're going to get that through, working people learning, through experience, through, organizing that we have to be as united as possible in fighting, Trump. For example, by also in fighting the entire system, also fighting the Democratic Party, which is part of the capitalist system. And anyway, you'll get the drift. By the way, we often start off with a quick soundbite definition of what is socialism, if you're brand new to this whole topic, which is fine. I find a lot of dictionaries actually have a fairly good definition of it, believe it or not. But let's just give our quick one, which is the basic essence of socialism is bringing democracy to the economy. And that might sound kind of plain, you know. Oh, what do you mean by that? Well, basically, there's nothing more authoritarian, nothing more totalitarian than a corporation run by, you know, a handful of unelected CEOs. They're elected by their own corporate board, but not by the people that work in a given workplace or whatever. And they run the show, and through controlling how things are made in this society, how things are, what is to be made, how things are made, and how they're to be distributed. Right now, they're not distributed; they're actually sold for profit. That is all the main power of how people live, are forced to live, and how life itself and survive things that we need to survive are produced and reproduced. So, if you control that mechanism. If you control those factories, if you control that land, etc., I'm referencing George Carlin here. He had some of his late material would be very, very basic, like almost Marxist lectures about they control all the land, they control all the businesses, they run the show, and that's basically what we're talking about. If you control them, as Marxists would say, the means of production of goods and services, that of commodities and services or commodities in general. Then you that's a way of not only amassing wealth but amassing it, getting more and more wealth, not just you know, plenty of rich people. There are very few in the world, but of those few rich people, statistically speaking, some of them inherit money, and that in itself does not make them a capitalist. It makes them a, you know, person that's probably going to be pretty ugly in the way they live and pretty horrible in their consumption patterns and so on. But that's not really the problem. If we could have a socialist revolution tomorrow, rich people are allowed, whatever you have in your pocket right now, you can run away with that and you can do whatever you want with that money. It means nothing. What is important is the fact that you no longer control rich people. You no longer control what's going to be produced, how it's going to be produced, and how it's going to be distributed. And by distribution this time, we mean distribution for people's needs and what people vote to have distributed for each other, what they feel they need. And that's where democracy comes in. If you bring democracy into that mechanism of production and distribution, then you have socialism. That is democratic socialism, basically. That through networks locally, nationally, regionally, internationally, it has to be international, we would be deciding, hey, we're going to produce these things. We're going to produce them in a way that's not going to hurt the environment, and we're going, or minimally hurt the environment, if until we get to a point when not hurting it at all. And we're going to be distributing it for human need, right?
Well, I just add to that it would be a real change in participation of the masses of people in their own interest, in their own daily lives, in
right.
providing for their
Absolutely.
Lives. It wouldn't just be every 2 years or every 4 years we have an election and then we go back to being oppressed or underserved or angry about lack of what we need.
Right, I agree, Tom. And also you're reminding me of sort of this program we have in every issue of Socialist Alternatives newspaper called What We Stand For. It's also online at socialistalternative.org. And believe me, a lot of the things that we're talking about have been written about by socialists and Marxists historically, and they are continued to be discussed and written about and talked about and used in real life. For example, there's a member of Socialist Alternative that's been elected and reelected to city council in Seattle, Washington, Shama Sawant, K-S-H-A-M-A, first name, Sawant, S-A-W-A-N-T, last name, Shama Sawant. And Shama, as a member of Social Alternative, has been able to help organize mass movements, for example, to get a $15 minimum wage law passed in Seattle and other community-based movements to stop rent gouging, ridiculously high rents, to fight against that, to stop these ridiculous move-in fees in Seattle, and many other things related to different issues. And that is through the use of, basically a socialist analysis trying to figure out something we call perspectives, what's going to be happening in the future, what are the forces at work in terms of economics, in terms of government, in terms of society, and so on.
I was just going to add that there's an article in this new issue of the paper discussing the $29 million housing program that was the result of an active, militant, community-based campaign led by Shama and others in Seattle to address the housing crisis there, which is massive because... where you have corporate headquarters, so many corporate headquarters in Seattle. Seattle is rapidly, like Boston and Chicago and New York City and all the major cities in the country, is becoming only livable for the rich, for the 1%. And the 99% who live in those cities are being pushed out because of gentrification and because of landlordism, namely gouging rents. So it in addition to the rents, there needs to be the building of housing. And to do that, you have to put major money into that. And it has to be affordable housing.
Well, also with, we're going to get more into that in a few minutes, hopefully. I heard, I think it was on National Propaganda Radio, I'm not sure, that I heard in some radio outlet that, and I've heard this many times before, but it cropped up again. Boston is the third most expensive city after New York and L.A., I believe. Or what's the other one? New York and... Anyway, where's
San Francisco.
That's it. Sorry, not L.A. New York, San Francisco, Boston. Dubious thing to be. Really horrible. And we could get into, reasons why that is, but the fundamental reason is capitalism. Housing is not seen as a right, but seen as something to make a profit off of. And that's just ridiculous. Housing is a human right. We also, by the way, speaking of National Propaganda Radio, we were talking off air about how it's easy to have a show like this, Socialist Alternative Radio, that's very partisan for working people and for socialism, and to spend the whole hour excoriating, attacking the corporate media for their lies, because it's really a big part of, not the main part, some people exaggerate it, I think, a little too much, but it is a big part of keeping the system going. And especially at crucial times, telling lies that disorient a movement or disorient people. But and just pretense to objectivity. It's just absurd. There's no objectivity in the corporate media. There's advertising, for God's sake. Even on National Propaganda Radio, they have advertising now. They're pro-capitalist. They don't question capitalism. They don't question imperialism. They don't question the corporation's existence. They don't question, they don't say housing is a human right. You know, you could just go through a whole list of things that are absolutely forbidden on corporate radio. Sorry, Tom, go ahead.
Nothing. I was just going to say, to go along with that not only are people being pushed out of cities, but if they can't be pushed out of cities, they can be deprived of every service that makes life bearable, like quality education, public education, even clean drinking water, safe streets, yeah, and lighting. Everything is optional and according to the schedule of profit making of the big corporations, who don't really need these people anymore, I guess.
And speaking of not clean drinking water, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I didn't have it in my mind to talk about, and I should have today. You'll see on Facebook, I go to Socialist Students on Facebook, that a group called Socialist Students, a national student group in colleges mainly right now, is getting off the ground. It's initiated by Socialist Alternative, and members of Socialist Students just went to Flint, Michigan, which the corporate media's kind of forgotten about, but there's still places there where there's no clean water, and they went and brought water, bottled water, to a housing complex that still needs it. And, it, you know, we don't believe charity's going to set us free or anything like that, but it's important to, you know, where we have gather the resources to, you know, help out, and also try to organize around that. So Socialist Students went out there. I think there's some video on Facebook. You should definitely check that out. Speaking of, we're going to come back to this again and again, hopefully in the show. But while we're at action, doing things, please, whatever you are doing on January 20th, change it up a little bit, work it up, you know, get some time off, because that is the inauguration of Trump. On January 20th, and nationwide, there are going to be protests in many, many cities against Trump's inauguration. And Socialist Alternative is initiating many of these protests. There's a big one in Washington also, Washington, D.C., of course. We didn't initiate that. We support it, but we didn't initiate it. But we also really hope people will protest in their own cities, and we are helping to do that. And it's taking two different forms, sort of working together in different cities. I'll speak about Worcester, Massachusetts, for example. Student walkout from high schools and colleges at noon, and then at 4 p.m. a rally for workers and students. So we're trying to get a situation where both groups, so to speak, can protest and protest together ultimately. Now, whether these walkouts are totally successful or not, no way of knowing, but we do have members of Social Alternative who are high school students who are organizing their high school, and they say the feedback is pretty good, that people are interested in helping out and doing this. So check out J20 Actions around the country. Go to socialistalternative.org for more information. Go to Socialist Students for more information to find out about a rally in your city. Now, some cities are maybe not doing the student walkout and just have a rally sort of in the evening. Some cities are doing student walkout plus a rally. Boston is working on that. The Boston branch of Socialist Alternative is having a rally. I don't have the leaflet in front of me. For more information, you can call for Boston 910-639-3948. That's 910-639-3948. For more information about the details, I believe it's a 6 p.m. rally, but I have to double check that in Boston. And they might also be doing a student walkout. Sorry, I didn't have that leaflet in front of me. And Rhode Island in Providence, a 6 p.m. rally against Trump. Again, all this is on January 20th. And if you want more information about anything to do with Socialist Alternative, hopefully joining Socialist Alternative, you can write to info@socialistalternative.org. That's by you know, email. Facebook is facebook.com/socialalternativeUSA. Twitter at Socialist Alt. In New England here, I already gave you the phone number for the Boston organization. For Worcester, 617-285-9346. For Rhode Island, write to socialistalternativeRhodeIsland@gmail.com. In Lowell, Mass., if you're from Connecticut, other New England states, again, go to info@socialistalternative.org. So, and basically, if you go to a Facebook page, Social Alternative Radio, we have a lot of these announcements up on our Facebook page for J20, January 20th, it's a Friday. Get some time off that day. Get the afternoon off that day for student walkouts, hopefully worker walkouts, but I'd say it's more like just going to a rally in the late afternoon, early evening.
Should be easy for students because students, usually high school students, get out around 3 o'clock.
Well, we're asking them to walk out of their classes, so it won't be easy. We're asking them to actually do a protest. And where that comes from is not a vacuum. It comes from the fact that right after Trump got elected, you might remember that week, there was a lot of a lot of organized student walkouts, especially in high schools where the majority are students of color. They walked out, and that continued for like a week. It didn't get much corporate media play, but we knew it was happening, and it happened in a lot of big cities, LA, etc. And also, there were these protests, a good number of which were initiated by Socialist Alternative, that were huge. They were really big for being protests organized within 48 hours. You know, at least thousands, you know, and hundreds in smaller cities, and organized very quickly. This is an attempt to continue that student walkout tactic, and to have another rally, but doing it for obvious reasons on January 20th when Trump is inaugurated. So, again, check in with socialalternative.org. Check in with socialist students for information about getting involved. We want you to be out there protesting is what we're talking about. Let's make it really clear. January 20th, it's a Friday. Find your local protest or go to Washington. Now, January 21st, there's going to be a women's march in Washington, D.C. Million Women's March is how I remember hearing about it. I don't know if it's changed its name up at all. And you can get more information about that from socialalternative.org as well. I think there will be some local women's marches on the 21st, I would imagine. I know there's going to be one in Providence, I'm pretty sure about that. I don't have the details in front of me. But again, January 20th, protest Trump's inauguration. If you're a high school student, get in touch with us, you know, to organize a walkout or help organize a walkout in your school. If you're a college student and you're back, same thing. I think most schools are back by the 20th or just getting back on the 20th, I hope.
That's right. And there are some programs that are in January, throughout January.
There should be a walkout, you know. I'll tell you a funny story. In Worcester, right, where there's a growing Socialist Alternative branch, there's a lot of students at Clark University, relatively speaking, a lot of students at Clark University, meaning, let me rephrase that. There's a good number of the branch of Socialist Alternative in Worcester are students from Clark University. I don't want to give the impression that like there are hundreds of students from Clark. We're talking about, you know, 20 or whatever, who are in Socialist Alternative. And they are, you know, we started talking about a walkout, both in the high schools and colleges in Worcester a while ago. And, you know, we started talking about that like right that week, maybe the week after the election or something like that. Word got up to the administration at Clark. So they canceled classes on Trump's inauguration day. They canceled classes and they're going to have a sort of touchy-feely liberal thing about race relations, you know. And I don't know if that will be enough for Clark students or not. I hope not. I hope they want something more, more significant and it'll impact more than just sitting around with the administration's nose in it, talking. Clark has done this stuff before. They're very adept at manipulating liberal sentiment there, despite being a corporation making a lot of money. And we hope that people will see through that. Now, we know that's real because a member of Social Alternative was on some committee where that was inaugurated, and that a new member of Social Alternative. And so that we know that it's a direct response to the walkout idea, not just an unfortunate coincidence.
I was just going to ask, Jeff, is Clark University a sanctuary university?
there's movement on the university to make that happen. But also, I've heard, and this would have to be double checked, but I've heard from another member of Social Alternative that Clark unfortunately vets its, checks its workers and students. They do check their immigration status, so therefore there wouldn't be anybody working or a student being a student at Clark that doesn't have their legal papers, so to speak. Just to be clear, our position in Social Alternative is we support working people and youth regardless of immigration status. We believe in papers for all, so to speak. We believe in everybody. We believe in an immigrant amnesty. We think that we need the unity of the working class internationally. That means across borders. So we don't. We want immigrants to have full rights and to be able to organize themselves and organize with others and fight if they need to and not live sort of an underground existence or whatever. So we do support sanctuary cities and the sanctuary campus movement, although I think it makes more sense to do it citywide, and we're pushing for that. It's right on our leaflet for the rally. It's going to be Worcester as a sanctuary city. Of course, the right-wingers like Trump, they use as a wedge issue, as a way to divide and conquer workers, the whole issue of immigration. And that's such a joke. It's always been so obvious to me. I think even before I became a socialist that, wait a minute. I guess maybe it's because my grandparents were immigrants from Poland, that I saw they had no power. I mean, they don't decide their job. They apply for a job like everyone else, and the bosses decide to hire immigrants or not. Based on the whims of the bosses, based on their profit-making schemes. And yes, they do like to hire immigrants because they can hold, if they're illegal, they can hold the threat of deportation or detention over their head as another way to attack workers. So they like that. And they'll try to break the law. A lot of bosses, a lot of big corporations will try to break the law and pay immigrants less than they're supposed to be paid or pay them under the table and all that. And I don't blame the immigrants for that. That's just trying to survive, it's the boss's fault. It's the corporation's fault. And thankfully, a lot of immigrants see through that stuff, and they do still organize. There are illegal immigrants organizing into unions and organizing in the $15 an hour minimum wage movement. And I'm just really very, very impressed by the power that immigrant workers have in the society, despite what's against them, the racism, the laws, and idiots like Trump. Perhaps idiot is not the right word for that. I don't, it doesn't really matter about Trump's personal intelligence or lack thereof. It's more like Trump's the evil the evil that Trump does and that the people around him do. By the way, back when we were talking about Trump, there was a point where I wanted to say something just slipped out of my mind again. It was basically like, not just the obvious fact, we're not just talking about Trump and the system, but did you notice what happened with the stock market around Trump? Remember that? Like the day of the election?
It went up, didn't it?
Went down at first. This is very interesting. So it was going down prior to the election. And I think the corporate media had this kind of right for once. They said something like, well, they're just the investors, quote unquote, meaning the big capitalists, the big banks and all that. They don't know what's going to happen. They want some certainty, somewhat at least, about where they're going to throw their money to make more money, right? And
just the election, with their political endorsements.
There you go. So the election was so close. Well, they play both sides of the fence,
right?
In United States terms, Clinton got much more corporate money than Trump, but Trump also got a lot of corporate money and spent his own corporate money. And there's a whole long history of elections in the U.S. where the corporations will spread money almost equally between Republicans and Democrats. They usually, I think historically, they've been a little more to the Republicans, but that could have shifted now with Clinton getting so much corporate support. So the point is that Trump is not just what Trump represents, but it's like, notice what the stock market did, right? It went down and then it went up, like you said, the same day it started to go up. And then after that, there was a, it kept going up, and pretty much it's gone up with a couple dips since then. Because I think there's a few reasons, but one obvious reason I'm trying to get out is that basically they like Trump. They liked Clinton. They also liked Trump. There's this whole thing. I don't know if it's a, I don't know if it's an American phenomenon or what. I think it's somewhat an American phenomenon, because I think politics is kind of backward in America because we don't have a workers' party of some sort. Like, we don't have a socialist party or communist party that at least historically fought the system. Because we don't have that conscious, class consciousness is low. Understanding of politics among sections of the population that should understand it better is pretty low, I think. And so, and it's just ignorance. It's not stupidity or anything. People could learn very quickly if they got involved in the struggle, if there was a party that really spoke for working people, people will learn stuff which they already kind of know intuitively. It would become more explicit. They could articulate it better and so on. They wouldn't fall for those that have wouldn't fall for Trump as easily, in my opinion. But anyway, there's this thing where apparently we can't have more than one enemy at a time or one problem at a time. Like the whole duopoly of the corporate parties, Republican and Democrat, and the whole lesser evilism thing. I've been saying on Facebook when I get in debates with people about that, I say, look, we can have the working class, working people can have more than one enemy at a time. Can't you envision it's the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are both your enemy? You can't. Is that totally beyond your comprehension? And someone could say, legitimately, from their point of view, they could say, no, I understand that, but this one's a little less. And then when they say that, boom, we go into the history. Well, are they really a little less? Well, not really. They're really not. They've got a history. Democratic Party has a history of doing things just as bad and sometimes worse than the Republican Party when it comes to working people. And they also work together in a bipartisan manner, and all that bipartisanship they love so much at certain times. You know, that creates a dynamic that they're obviously both representing the interests of U.S. foreign policy, or what some people would call imperialism, U.S. imperialism. And interesting, and policies, the economic policies of the super rich, of the big capitalists. That's what they're there for. We can have two enemies at one time, and I think of that in terms of other dynamics that come up where it seems like we can only focus on one thing at a time. No, there can be multiple attacks on the working class, you know, at multiple levels. Anyway, go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say there are plenty of examples under the Obama administration, especially in terms of attacks against working people who were immigrants, and bailing out the banks instead of bailing out the people who were ruined by the banks, whose lives were ruined by the banks, and then doing nothing to prevent the housing bubble that ensued, where mortgages, where people were yep. people who need housing. We all need housing. If you have one, you need to hold on to it. If you don't have one, you need to get one. The banks, knowing that, manipulated the housing market, and eventually people who were given houses for a short time found themselves back out on the street and their credit ruined.
Yep.
While realtors and others got rich. There's actually quite a good film about that called 99 Homes, I highly recommend, with Michael Shannon, about a real estate shark in Florida who needs to flip a 1,000 homes in order to be bought up by an even bigger real estate shark, and that's the derivation of the title. And throughout the whole film, he's flipping homes and ruining working people.
It's a documentary, obviously.
It's a fictional film.
Oh, it's but fictional.
It's a docudrama. It's based on the practice of people, and you still see billboards and advertisements of people with big shining faces saying, get rich in the real estate market, learn how to flip houses, or we buy ugly houses.
Hey, if you're just joining in, you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class, democratic socialist perspective, and we're here every other Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. This is January 1st, 2017. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. And today we have a special guest, Tom. Is that how you introduced yourself, Tom? I don't remember.
Tom.
Special guest, Tom. And a special guest host, Tom. And Tom has called into the show before, and he's been an active socialist for a long time. So, again, welcome, Tom.
Thank
you. And my name is Jeff, and we'll be here with you a little, about an hour and a half more. And earlier in the show, we talked about a big thing we're going to come back to from time to time today, January 20th, Trump's Inauguration Day. Get out and protest Trump. Now, what we didn't talk about earlier that I wanted to mention is Socialist Alternative has helped organize, has initiated and helped organize many of these big demonstrations against Trump that happened right after the election. And we're very proud of that. And this has brought a lot of new members into our organization and so on. That's great. But and there were student walkouts, which we talked about. But now the target is January 20th, Inauguration Day, fight Trump. Now, what I forgot to say earlier, what we didn't come out earlier, is that our position here on fighting Trump is not a purely defensive one. We do believe in defending anyone that Trump goes after, immigrants, Muslims, trans people, you name it. We are going to defend, we're going to get involved in those defensive struggles, and we want to be able to organize rallies quickly to go out and defend anyone under attack by emboldened right-wingers because Trump got elected or whatever. But we also see room here for offensive, for an offensive, for struggles that are going to gain things for us, like the $15 minimum wage struggle. We see, even under Trump, we can win that. We can win many other struggles under Trump for reducing student debt or limiting student debt, for free public education, for national health care, you know, which I refer to as single-payer health care. These struggles should not be put on the back burner or considered impossible under Trump. Just the opposite, because historically, in the United States, conservative presidential regimes have been forced to accept concessions to the working class, to the youth. Give a quick example of the Nixon administration. Conservative core, conservative administration. Nixon, a huge anti-communist, quote-unquote, Cold Warrior type, very conservative, very much strange like Trump, very much disliked. And yet, of course, through the corporate media and through the two corporate political parties, this became our president, quote unquote. Or, you know, I'm doing a Nixon. I'm shaking my jowls as we talk. And I remember this guy, right? In fact, I grew up, let's digress for a second. I grew up in a very conservative working class neighborhood, or neighborhoods, more than one. And actually in 1968, when Nixon ran against Humphrey, I was a little kid. And I remember on the bus, maybe we were more politicized then because it was the 60s, a chant, 2, 4, 6, 8, who do we assassinate? That's true. Humphrey, yay. So it was anti-working class kids chanting against Humphrey. Very, very sad. Might make you think of working class people, some, not as many as we're told, but some have, who have voted for Trump and say, what the heck's going on? Well, this was the post-war upswing. This was people that, many of whom had some memory of childhood or remember their parents struggling during the Depression, and things were pretty good. This is for mostly white workers, not totally, but mostly in the
white
post-war upswing. But I think families were doing better for a time. In some parts of the country, again, this was regional, in the post-war upswing that was still happening in the 60s. Now, it was going to crash pretty sharply in 74, 75, but it hadn't happened yet, right? So you did have this. And also, I had an older brother who was in the Vietnam War and we had the draft back then. So there was a large section of the working class that had kids, part of their family, their brothers, their children in the war. So that, and you're taught, if you have someone in the war, to be nationalistic, to be patriotic, quote unquote, and to support the war and all that. Now, of course, there was this huge movement that developed against the war. There's this big clash. But what I'm getting at is how a couple things, how quickly consciousness can change, but also a real, real truth about the situation. So here, Nixon had a lot of support, right? And he even got reelected Remember that? When he got reelected, the left was
on the notion that he was going to end.
Yeah,
the
it was a lie. You know, and like a lot of lies are told and by the politicians. So the point here, or one of the points here, is that so Nixon gets reelected, the left was crushed. They hated that. They how did he get reelected? We thought we were making gains. Our demonstrations are so big and so on. And they were right. Their demonstrations were big and they were making gains. But electoral politics isn't just a snapshot. It's not the be-all and end-all of consciousness. It's not the be-all and end-all of movements. And it's important. It's important to engage, but it's not everything. So so basically Nixon gets reelected, and yet that throughout that Nixon administration, especially the second term, or the end of the first term, into the second term, you had incredibly progressive legislation being passed because of the pressure of the mass movement, starting out the anti-Vietnam War movement, spreading to the troops, the anti-Vietnam movement among the troops, the most working class element of the mass movement in the 60s, 70s. You had the women's movement spin off that. You had the environmental movement spin off that. You had black power continuing out of the civil rights movement through the Black Panther Party and so on. All these things put so much pressure on the Nixon administration, a conservative administration, that Roe versus Wade was passed, EPA was passed, OSHA was passed, all sorts of, you know, the war was not ended as soon as it should have been, but it was certainly
beginning of negotiations.
Yeah, beginning of the end, and forced their hand to end it, and especially the troop revolt, which doesn't get enough credit for that, and also the end of the draft, etc. You know, so there was just like this whole pressure put on it. I'm leaving out things that were won at that time. A lot of things, by the way, because that kind of radicalism permeated a lot of layers of U.S. society. The working class and the labor movement never weighed in as much as it should have, but there were examples of some participation there. But also, like Tom, you work. I'll just say in general, you work with something to do with law. as a secretary, clerical worker, and you might remember this radical law studies that blossomed at that time.
That's instead of
mass incarceration, it was rehabilitation. You know, now that didn't win at the end because the movement died down. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that was a movement that basically said it's not just the law in the books, the black lines that say this is the law, this is what you do, this is the statute, but it's actually how institutions of the law actually behave in practice, like ride-alongs with the police to see what the police were really doing,
yep.
Going into courts and seeing how courts in different areas acted in different ways with different populations of people, especially in poorer communities or communities of color.
Yep. So there was a general the analogy, and we could use other examples of there's not a direct correlation, not a direct connection between conservative presidential regime defeats by the working class. There's enough countervailing evidence. There's enough other evidence that shows the working class through the unions, through mass protest, through mass movements can win gains. So we're going into the whole Trump era as socialist alternative, as socialists, thinking, yeah, we have to defend some things, but we have to win some things. We're going to go on the offensive, and it's going to be civil frickin' war, not a day's peace with the Trump administration. Now, we don't have the power right now to say, okay, you know, we're going to get rid of Trump, you know, we're going to put so much pressure on him, he's going to resign or something. We don't have that power yet. But through United Front tactics, like we talked about earlier, hopefully we can influence and put forward the idea that, no, we don't have to normalize Trump, we don't have to reach accommodation with Trump, and that the way forward is not supporting the Democratic Party. You can have two enemies, Republicans and Democratic Party, Republican Party and Democratic Party. And the way to move forward is to build a party for the 99%, build a party for working people. Maybe we'll get into that a little more here. Now, also earlier in the show, we're talking about January 20th, going out and protesting. We have an article in the new issue of Socialist Alternative called How to Join a Walkout Near You. This is directed mainly at students. But again, if you go to these websites and so on, you'll also probably see rallies after working hours or towards later in the afternoon for workers as well. So how to join a walkout near you, go to www.socialiststudents.net, go to facebook.com/socialiststudentsusa, I'll just read a quick excerpt from this. This movement against Trump isn't going to build itself. The Democratic Party failed to defeat Trump, which puts the responsibility on our social movements. Already students in dozens of cities are organizing walkouts, both in high schools and on college campuses. The only way to stop Trump's agenda is with a mass movement of millions of people, and this starts on January 20th, day one of Trump's presidency. Go to socialstudents.org to find the list of already declared walkouts to see if there's one planned in your campus or in your city. That's socialstudents.org. If there's not one already, all one word, by the way, in your area, call one yourself. All you have to do is make a Facebook event and send the link to contact@socialstudents.org, and we'll send you templates for flyers, posters, sign-up sheets. We'll post the event and help you start the organizing process. Young people have been at the forefront of virtually every movement in the past 5 years, from Occupy Wall Street to Black Lives Matter. And students played a key role in the civil rights movement. And we're going to play a key role in fighting back against Trump's hatred and bigotry. Go to socialstudents.org and join the nationwide student walkout.
I just wanted to say that there is a great value in joining an organization, maybe like never before, as we go through the next period. And that's not just because we have to build a mass resistance, which we do and which we intend to do, but because it's so easy, if you're not in a movement, to become over frightened, I would say, or to become apathetic, because you basically feel, what can I do as one person? Well, you can do a lot. That's been the theme of the program. But when you go and you affiliate to an organization such as Socialist Alternative, you have a forum where you hear and see and are in comradeship with others who are like-minded, co-thinkers, we call them, perhaps there's other words for it, but you don't have to feel alienated, because you realize that you're not alone. And that's one of the things that the capitalists and the whole system want you to feel, is helpless and alone, and therefore you have to do basically what authority figures tell you have to do.
I totally agree. Remember right after the election, I haven't seen this lately, but I guess it's still out there, Trump scares me. I'm really afraid of Trump. I mean, good people were saying this. People not so great maybe were saying this. And that really bothered me, because it seems so passive and so, like, I'm just going to be a victim of Trump or something. I mean, shouldn't you be angry? Shouldn't you be angry at Trump? Shouldn't you be wanting to organize against Trump? Shouldn't you be wanting to find other people that may be afraid, but together you don't have to be afraid? Like, some of the stuff you were just saying, Tom, I think is really, really important. So if you find yourself afraid of Trump, well, think twice. You know, get involved with Socialist Alternative. Get involved with the January 20th walkouts. And protests against on Inauguration Day against Trump, I can't say there's no reason to be afraid. Of course there is, with Trump targeting and his rhetoric targeting, his racist rhetoric, his anti-immigrant rhetoric, his misogynist rhetoric. Sure, yes, technically speaking, lots to fear, right? But framing everything within that paradigm of I'm afraid, it just seems a little weird to me. Aren't you also angry? Don't you also want to do something about it? Maybe you don't know what to do. Well, get in touch with Socialist Alternative, and we can try to explain what we can do, and you see us doing it, and be out with us doing it. So, like we said earlier in the show, also there is a new issue of Socialist Alternative out here. It's a paper. We have it out in print. We have it on our website, socialistalternative.org. This is the December-January issue. Big headline, Trump can be defeated. Protest the inauguration, build the resistance. But also, I think it says in various places that we can win gains. We can win things, even with the Trump offensive, the Trump regime in power. I'm going to read a little bit from a couple things from this issue, but just give an overview. A lot of the articles are obviously about Trump, like why we're walking out against Trump. Global days of protest to resist Trump. In other words, it's not just going to be in the United States. It's going to be international protests, some of which are going to be initiated by the Committee for Workers International, which is an international group of socialist organizations and parties in about 40, 50 countries around the world. And Socialist Alternative here in the United States is in political solidarity with the Committee for Workers International. And because socialism is has to be international, as capitalism is international. If it's capitalism, it's going to be changed and defeated, and we're going to build a socialist society, it has to be international in terms of having the resources available and so on. Now, big center page article, again, Trump, we must prepare massive resistance. And a good lessons of history article next to that about examples of mass resistance. For example, we were just talking about immigrants. Remember the 2006 May 1st day without an immigrant in 2006? That was a very powerful walkout of mostly immigrant workers around the country. And in certain cities, it took out a critical mass in like Los Angeles and so on, where it did stop big business to a great extent, not totally, but to a great extent. And also was very, very visible and also energized the immigrant rights movement and energized the unions. Now, there wasn't a, like we had at the time, we were much smaller, Social Alternative, we were trying to get an organization out of that, some sort of organization that would continue out of that, as were others, and that never coalesced. But it was a brilliant example of, at a time, yeah, Clinton was in power. What, I'm sorry, 2006. Who was in power then? I'm drawing a blank. That wasn't, that was past Clinton. It was one of the Bushes, right? Who was 2004?
George
Bush.
Yeah.
George W. Jr., right?
Junior.
Junior was in power. So that's a good example. Junior, conservative, into his second term then, right? Because Obama got elected in 2008. So basically you had, you could have had a lot of demoralization, a lot of whatever, and the immigrant rights movement or left-wing sections of it said, no, we're going to go out and protest. May 1st is our traditional International Workers Day in every country except the United States, and even though it started here, it should be our tradition. It is a little bit, but not enough. By the way, we were talking about immigrant fighters and organizers and by fighters, I mean immigrants who are fighting for their rights and immigrants who are organizing and people helping them organize earlier in the show. And 2006, the May 1st demonstrations in 2006 are a great example of that in the United States. And I meant to say earlier that a lot of immigrant workers bring the traditions of their countries to this country, which is very helpful. Because in their countries, they probably have, I would say almost certainly have, a workers' party or two or three. So they don't come from this corporate duopoly. Americans think, oh, everything's great in this country. No, politically, things suck in this country, and we're very backward in this country in many ways politically because we don't have a party for working people. Most other countries' working classes have achieved that historically. Whether it's that they've maintained it is another question, but they've achieved an independent party, Communist Party, Socialist Party, Labor Party, Party of the Workers, whatever you want to call it, that was not created by the corporations, but was created by, or slave owners, like with the Democratic Party, but was created by workers and funded by unions and working people or just working people. and in countries where that exists or even where it exists in recent memory, meaning the party might have gone over to pro-capitalist, you'll find the social condition, the social welfare conditions are much better, even in poorer countries. We've all seen, or many of us have seen these statistics of the U.S., how the U.S. stacks up among the OECD countries, or just a list of all countries. Like on maternity and paternity leave, we're down with the lowest countries in the world, like Sierra Leone and excuse me, one other country. Have you seen that chart?
Yes.
That means every other country, like 160 countries or something, have better paternity and maternity leave than the United States, the richest country in the world. That's inequality slapping us around like unbelievable.
Life expectancy.
Yeah, life expectancy going down recently in the United States. The latest statistics on life expectancy, I can't remember if this is for the population as a whole or for a segment of the population, but it was found to be going down suddenly. Look at college enrollment rates. The United States traditionally has high college enrollment rates compared to other countries because it's such a widespread business. This could include community colleges, whatever, right? But because it's a business, we have a very low graduation rate, right? Because people end up not being able to afford to go all the way. And now we're seeing a drop in basic enrollment. So even that little trick of having 55% or whatever enrolled in colleges, which is a little higher than some other countries, doesn't really you know, it can't really skew the picture anymore like it did, because what's really happening is that's going down too. If you look at the real statistic, who graduates, how many graduates, it's hovered around 25-30% over decades, over a long period of time. And before World War, before the 50s, it was even lower, much lower. That's worth the whole show some days. I don't know much about it, but I'd like to learn more about it, how higher education, quote unquote, college education, really went from a very elitist thing in the United States in general until what? Maybe 1950, I would say. And then the way we think of college now, with all these community colleges, state colleges, colleges, even private colleges, a lot of them, let's say, like numerically speaking, seemingly a lot of them, that's fairly new, isn't it? Historically, that's like 1950 on, because with the GI Bill and all that. Because before that, it was like Harvard was extremely elitist, for example. I mean, they still are, but I mean, it was like...
Well, not only elitist, but exclusionary.
Yeah, of course.
Excluding racial.
Women had to go to Radcliffe and all that. Mm-hmm. But I think that just the... that high rate of... Relatively high rate, and I mean very relative, under a social society, it would be, you know, 100% or 90-something percent probably. But... That relatively high rate of 55% or whatever of college enrollment in the U.S., if you include community college and all that, that's even falling now. Even though people can't even afford the community colleges anymore. They can't even afford the state schools anymore. You know, we know for UMass, for example, they keep raising tuition and fees.
Right. That's a trick, too. Fees.
Fees. Tuition and fees. I always have to say tuition and fees.
And fees in high school. Fees for sports.
Yep. Yep, fees in high school. It's getting real. Again, this is a show that, because of the internet, goes out internationally. We talk a lot about the U.S., of course, mostly about the U.S., and we talk about Massachusetts and Boston, because we're emanating from Somerville, Medford, two cities that border Boston. And we're talking about local stuff, too, and we're going to get into that more. But the fact is, some of our international listeners might be just shocked if they had to live here. Might be just shocked at the amount of money we pay out every day for stuff that's free or highly subsidized in other countries. And even countries that are, maybe that's, unfortunately, they're going this way, but they're not there yet, you know? It's just sad. And a lot of Americans don't realize it. They just accept it as the way things have to be or something. And it's totally wrong. Even within our own generations, if we had some sense of, again, having a workers' party creates a generational memory that goes, you know, where you can, you know, creates a alternate press. It does a lot of things that you can. There's just a general, it's just a better way of trying to remember the past and what people had and now don't have or have gained recently and didn't have before. And what we are, I remember just in my own life, for example, that when my older brothers and sister went to high school, there was more things like trips, you know, to cities, to see the cities, trips to museums, you know, field trips. There were no fees for athletics like you talked about. You know, all these things, if you could just match these things.
School orchestras. You
know, yeah.
Plays.
Yeah. All culture. Sorts of stuff that's under attack or non-existent.
Language programs.
Yep. By the way, we're just thumbing through the paper here. Good article, which I'm going to read excerpts from, hopefully, growing push to take back, quote-unquote, the Democratic Party, meaning it was never ours, and why it's not a good idea to try to take it back. More on the inauguration resistance, victory at Standing Rock, Seattle housing activists win $29 million for affordable housing, as Tom mentioned earlier, Teamsters election... shook up the union, didn't result in a win for the anti-Hoffa forces, for the, I would say, pro-membership forces. A candidate named Fred Zuckerman came with only 6,000 votes of unseating Hoffa, who is this son of a Teamster leader who was in many ways really horrible, and Hoffa has, his son Hoffa is now continuing sort of, he's like emblematic of the problems with the labor movement, sees unions as some sort of business for himself and his coterie, his friends, and doesn't understand class struggle and is seeing the union go downhill, basically, the Teamsters. in many ways, and sticking to that corporate model of business unionism. And then finally on the back page, we've got Stop Trump's Anti-Woman Agenda, article about the specific attacks Trump, specific propaganda against women by Trump, and specific attacks Trump has in the works in the Trump administration. And by the way, again, you hear us attacking Trump. Every time you hear that name Trump, we really mean the Trump regime. We really mean the capitalist class or that wing of it that supports him. And you know, like we said earlier, it was the most of the capitalists were supporting Clinton going into the election. Then they went into, they've very quickly